Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversations are pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Did you bring your thinking caps? Because it's time to put them on. Because the conversation starts now. Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. You are at the spot, you're at the place, the location right here. The place where the conversation is pointed and the guests are sharp and the responses are never dull. We're going to Australia for some fashion tips on sustainable, renewable fashion and to be able to repurpose it. That's Big Brains. My daughter is an amazing costume designer and makeup artist, and my husband taught her how to sew. Well, Susan DeMasi, her grandparents were a part of the World War. What is it, the first, second World War?
Second World War,
and they learned how to tailor. So that is really a lost art of knowing how to put things together, being in fashion, and look at all those beautiful bulks of fabric behind her. I can't wait to talk about that. So Brains, help me welcome her to the edge, Susan DeMasi. How are you, beautiful?
I'm well, April. Hello, how are you and how is everyone?
The Brains are doing good and we want to talk about fashion. You know, Brains, I'm telling you, I love to talk about all kinds of things on the show, but really what is the most endearing to me is the human interest part, the people's why. Why do they do what they do? What brought them to this point and what they're pouring into you? So Susan, tell us a little bit about you.
Well, thank you for asking. I'm by training a fashion designer. And when I say training, that started 30 years ago. That was not some sort of 2-week course. Mm-hmm. By training, I'm a fashion designer. I did a Bachelor of Arts. I did a master's. I started a PhD, which I didn't finish because my business grew. And by trade, I'm an artisan. And what I mean by artisan is I make clothes. I make custom and bespoke pieces. And I've made pieces for some of Australia's most intelligent women, like Reserve Bank of Australia board members, and some of the world's most creative women, like international pop star Björk, however you say that Icelandic name. And what really sets me apart is, based on working with very creative and very powerful women, I understand the style mindset. I understand why these highly creative, highly powerful women invest very heavily in style. And it's not because of the way they look. It's because of what it does for them. Mm. And it's something I'm always trying to share with as many women as possible. Clothes are tools. And it's what those tools do for you. And I've had that mindset insight from working with very creative and very powerful women. But I'm also an artisan and I've made their wardrobes. These are highly discerning clients. And I've made whole wardrobes, not just one-off pieces. And so combined with that insight into mindset, combined with my skill set to make clothes for really discerning women and the type of dresses that they wear to death on high rotation for 10 years and then come back to me and say, Susan, you know that dress you made me 10 years ago? Same again, please, different color. Let's review my measurements. That's a mindset and a skill set that I love to share with as many women as possible who I'll never meet face to face. I'll never make them a dress to help them take the time and the money that they're often spending on frustrating results.
Right.
Feeling like they have to accept compromise because of time and money. It's not true. It doesn't matter whether you spend $200 or $20,000. It's how you spend it. But it's getting really super clear on what you want those tools to do for you and then working backwards from that.
Right. And it's creating your style. You know, there are some women, we'll say, for example, Jackie Kennedy,
yeah,
that are iconic.
Yeah.
You know, that every first lady aspires to be dressed and the wardrobe. And like you said, the clothes, you have to wear them. They don't wear you.
Correct. And Jackie's a great example, as is someone like Audrey Hepburn, where and the fashion systems, you know, trained us to go, oh, they're classic. But classics become this sort of disruptive, this sort of corrupted word, because Jackie wasn't classic in her time. She was disruptive. If you look at a photo of her standing next to Lady Bird Johnson or other first ladies, she looks like she landed from Mars. She was completely different. She was being disruptive. And so her style, and this is really important, this is the real clincher, is power. It was power to hold space and to hold space with people on her own terms. And it sent a message from the start by looking so different. A, she took a risk to look that different because it could have, some people wouldn't have liked it in the day.
It backfired, right?
Yeah. And in the day, there would have been a whole lot of people that didn't like it. Mm-hmm. But in time, it becomes classic. So, and every woman has the ability to do that, be their own version of classic. But the fashion system does use that word classic to sell you stuff for more money, really. It's right. Not really classic.
Well, they want to make you seem that it's exclusive.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, and they're not just making one brains all the time. Sometimes they're making 10,000. Mm-hmm. I want to talk to you a couple things about cost and money in the fashion industry, because it is big business.
Mm. Multi-trillion. So,
let's talk about, you mentioned whether it costs $200 or $20,000. Mm-hmm. Cost per wear.
Yeah.
I had to get my head around that. Mm. Because I have a section of my closet that's very trendy. I mean, you know, I'm throwing on something that's very relaxed, very casual. Mm-hmm. But then I have a section of my closet with timeless classic pieces.
Mm.
That, you know, that black dress, that blazer, those nice pair of slacks.
Mm-hmm.
These are things that are timeless.
Mm-hmm.
That I will be able to put on a different blouse, put on some accessories, you know, wear a hat. Do mm-hmm. something different that really give it a new pizzazz, a new spark. But you better believe that if I'm paying anything over $300 to $500, I'm getting cost per wear. I'm going to mm-hmm. wear that same outfit to the next 5 events or 6 events until I get cost per wear. People don't mm-hmm. do that. Women wear 20% of their clothes 80% of the time, Susan.
Yeah. We're still April. They're wearing 20% of their clothes 80% of the time, and they're just tolerating them. They don't even love them. That, you know, if you ask them to rate the 20% that they're wearing on high rotation, oftentimes, you know, they're giving them like a 3 out of 10, because there's another really strange thing that's happened in the modern lexicon of fashion and dress, which is function. The idea of function has become conflated with disposability, and the idea of function, and because it's become conflated with disposability, it's also become acceptable not to like the things that you wear every day, that you just actually tolerate them. You know, and when you go to really good design, really good fashion design, function and something you love wearing every day can go together. You know, loving something doesn't have to mean it's rare and exclusive and only for a special occasion. You know, functionality, there's a saying in design, form follows function. You know, functionality and something you love wearing every day and something that lasts for a long time, that's functional. When you're wearing the $4 Kmart t-shirt and you don't even like it, and after 3 months you get rid of it, there's nothing functional about that. That's a lie.
Or don't even get rid of it. It's just sitting in the back of the closet.
Being a pain, taking up space. Not just physical space, mental space.
But even shopping off the rack, you know, I take it, I go and try it in. My figure has changed. I know it has. And I was taking my granddaughters out shopping, and they got on these clothes, and they were, you know, it was in an affordable discounted store, and it fit them perfectly. I said, but once you wash it, baby, it's going to shrink. And the worst thing you can do is be pulling and tugging on your clothes. It's a key indicator that it doesn't fit. It needs to be comfortable. But I was looking at some of these women that have been to the Met Gala, like one of the Kardashians. They want this trend and this look so much that they actually stitch them inside of the clothes. What's your weirdest experience with someone trying to get the right fit for them?
Look, my weirdest experience, and I'd love to come back and comment on the Met Gala thing. Because often we are setting our standards against things like the Met Gala, which is really like a weird thing to be setting our barometer by. You know, they're highly curated moments. They're highly, highly curated moments. They're not what we should be setting our barometer by, you know, because they are stitched in. Also, it is that person's job. It is the job of stars and celebrities to appear. They spend most of their day, you know, exercising, preening, getting their cosmetic enhancements. It's not a barometer to set our barometer by, and it's really unhealthy in so many ways, whether it's body dysmorphia or unnecessary cosmetic surgery, or whether it's just driving fast fashion, you know, to keep up with those women. But one of the weirdest engagements I had with a highly intelligent woman, was she asked me to make a couple of pieces for her, a size smaller, so that she would be inspired to lose weight to wear it. And it went against my principles, but I was dealing with a powerful and highly intelligent woman. So I was kind of like, well, I wouldn't do that if I was you. She insisted I did it. And then, of course, no sooner she got the pieces, she said, they don't fit me. I said, because you asked me to do this crazy thing, right? Really think this was a very good idea. I left the pieces with some seam allowance in the back to change them and alter them for her, and offered to go and alter the piece to change for her and make it fit her, which it was strangely an offer she never took up. But I think if you get caught up in this idea that style is going to come with a dress size, it does lead to really wasteful behavior. And I don't blame women who think style's going to come from dress size. We've been so heavily sold this belief by fitness and diet industry and the red carpet that if you're a certain size, you're going to automatically feel stylish. Well, I have really big news flash for brains, which is I have some very naturally skinny women. That's their way their body runs. And they don't automatically feel stylish. Style is not stuff. Style, therefore, does not come with a dress size. No. Style is a power that comes from within.
Right.
And when you get inside giving you the right messages and you push away all that societal crap that tells you have to be a certain body size and you have to be a certain beauty, you know, you have to fit into this box and this box and this box, that's all designed to keep you from never having style, right? And constantly buying.
To keep them, you know, to keep the designers designing. Mm-hmm. I've been to a lot of fashion shows. I've been to Fashion Week in New York. And people have to understand that also you're an artisan. You are creating art. You are creating an illusion. You are creating a fantasy. You are creating a moment, a snapshot in time. Brains, a lot of those things people aren't going to buy, and they're not going to be off the rack. But you have a sense, again, of gaining your power, seeing who you are or who you aspire to be. What would I be in this red dress? Or how would I feel when I walked into, you know, a business meeting in this power suit? So again, like you said, you are really also setting the mindset. You mentioned something else about sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big, faux pas in the fashion industry, because people are saying that the fashion industry is very wasteful. As far as, and very harmful to the environment, with different dyes and different type of fabrics. You know, everything is coming full circle. It used to be cottons and linens. Now they're using bamboo and they're using other types of sustainable products. But if you're using something like bamboo, I could only imagine, because I love bamboo t-shirts, but I could only imagine what you're having to do to break that bamboo down, to make it pliable, to make it a fabric. So talk to us a little bit about what you're seeing in the fashion industry when it comes to sustainability and renewability in the products and what we're purchasing?
Well, look, what I saw almost two decades ago when I started doing this was there was a big push towards those fibers, but I always wore secondhand clothes. I didn't grow up in a rich family, and I was always wearing secondhand things. And I had things that were 40, 50, 60 years old that I wore, and they were amazing, and I got compliments on it. And I looked at those fabrics, which were wool, leather, pure silk. So I thought, look, I understand these don't tick the contemporary sustainable boxes, but this is evidence. I've got clothes that have lasted 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years that I still wear. So I'm going to use pure wool, pure silk, pure leather, because if I can make something that will last at least 10 years and often have a second life and a third life. Oh. Now, at the time, you know, I did actually have the same lady who asked me to make an outfit a size smaller to her say, the problem with your work, Susan, is it lasts so long that people don't have reasons to keep buying from you. So you should just make things that are not going to last as long, or make something smaller that they can buy. And that really didn't sit right with me. And that's what was happening in the fashion industry. You know, you're either making things that don't last as long, or you're constantly trying to sell accessories and things like that to keep the sales going. I decided to go completely in the opposite direction and make those things that last and work with women over a much longer timeline. So one of my clients, for example, she took 3 years to pay off a coat. And during that time, we planned it, because she wanted a coat that she's literally going to wear for the rest of her life and give it to her child. So we made that a win-win scenario by her having a payment plan. So I've got the money coming in. We also have a wonderful time creating and really thinking about that piece, not for how is it going to serve her for 1 year or one winter, but for the rest of her life. And so that means that I also work with women on education and planning and scoping out a wardrobe. And that is the way that I create sustainability in my business, because I'm getting paid for all of that intelligence and intel. And they're also getting those extraordinary pieces out of the other side of it. And it makes things that people think are beyond their reach, within their reach. If you stop spending the $50 here and there, or the $10, or even the $100 and the $200, which all adds up to the coat that you think is beyond your wildest dreams, right? You know, but if you work backwards from your wildest dreams, actually all of those things are possible when you stop wasting those small amounts of money on throwaway things. Yeah. Right.
And when you look in your closet, I look in my closet and try your things on, brains. I tried a few things on. They didn't fit. I got rid of them immediately. I didn't put them back in there. You are who you are. And if you have the classic pieces, then, you know, some of those things aren't going to change, like a nice blazer or a beautiful shawl, or maybe a wraparound skirt. Some of those things that have flexibility. Purchase things that have adjustability.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
I'm at the point where... Well, I'm at the point where I'm putting a little bit more elastic in my clothing. I didn't like that, but you know what? It's about comfort. Even shoes, it's about comfort at this point. I'm going to be 60 years old, and I'm not going to try to look like I'm 20, 25 and be uncomfortable. Tell us about dressing appropriately for your age. A lot of women, I don't know, and again, it's trend to style, like the ripped up jeans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's over with, brains. It's really over with. But you'll see more mature women, 50, 60 years old, and I have a pair, but that's not something that I would try to wear to a luncheon. Yeah. I'd wear it out, you know.
Yeah, well, look, I don't believe in dressing for your age, and I believe in growing into your style. And historically, before 1960, the most stylish women were over 40, were over 50. And girls and daughters wanted to grow up to be like their super stylish mothers, you know, and aunts, and their super stylish grandmothers. And that's really what I'm trying to bring back through education is, you know, girls and mothers wanting to grow up to be super stylish like their mothers and their grandmothers. Unfortunately, what happened, particularly over the last, you could say 40, 50 years, really since the 1960s, is mothers are trying to grow down to be like their daughters. And look, what happened was, you know, the influx of ready-to-wear and clothes getting cheaper and faster. But at the same time as clothes got cheaper and faster, women lost their traditional skill set that used to be passed from mother to daughter to know how to sew. And if you didn't know how to sew, that you might have mum or auntie or the local dressmaker might have made something for you, and you got an education on how things fit, how things suited you, what was good quality and what wasn't good quality. All of that has largely dropped away for most people, unless you're in royalty or you're in the upper echelons. Most people don't work with dressmakers anymore, but all women of all stratas of society used to work with dressmakers, whether it was your mum or your sister or your auntie. And often we had two or three. You did some home sewing, you had someone in town, and if you were more moneyed, you had someone in the big city. You had a few layers of people you worked with. And it meant that as you grew up, you grew more and more into your style, you know?
Right, right.
And that's really what I'm trying to usher back through offering education and long-term planning, is growing up into your style and cutting yourself free of this kind of polar thing that we're either trying to dress too young, because what's offered to women of our age is awful, you know, like awful. So there's kind of like nothing in between, kind of dressing young and on trend, or what's offered to the woman of your age and your body shape and your income is awful. Yeah. And more women that come to me are now kind of 50 or 60. Intuitively, what they really want is really good fabric and really good fit. And so I'm actually just getting them back in touch with educating them about those things so they can get what they really want.
And that's important, because you're spending, yeah, you know, you're spending top dollar to work with someone like Susan. Okay, we're not talking about off the rack. We're talking about really classic piece. And so that takes time, that takes energy.
Yeah. You know, but that's something I can educate many women that I never make things for. So that, exactly, you know, you can go to find the local alteration assistant, find the local designers and work with them again.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about size.
Mm.
I'm a full figured woman. I've grown, as you said, I've grown into it. I've grown up into it. And fashion designers still are not recognizing women, I'll say, in the United States.
Mm.
I was just sitting at a restaurant, just watching and observing the people.
Mm.
And it's pretty horrific that Americans are so overweight. We are so, well, it's the portion sizes. It's that first world attitude. We love to eat. Mm-hmm. We want seconds. We drink our calories with all these beverages or alcohol, mm-hmm, or wine or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But we still want to look pretty. We still want to wear something, and we want to be able to purchase it off the rack, and we don't want to be discriminated against.
Mm.
So, you know, What are you seeing there? Because when I went to Australia, I didn't see, well, when I travel the world, really, I don't see as fluffy a people as I do in the United States.
Australia certainly does have an obesity problem as well. It's probably more evident in the country towns than the cities. And I think when you were here, you were in the cities. And particularly if you're in the heart of the city, you don't see it as much as if you go into the suburbs. And look, you know, there's a couple of things about size. We are getting obesity as a problem, but I think that needs to be separated from the fact that naturally as we age, our body does change. So there's healthy body change and there's not healthy body change. And I would like to see women be more accepting of their body changing as they get older. It's biology. It's biology. We're not supposed to stay the same body shape and have more distinction around healthy body change and unhealthy body change. Because I don't think, and I said it earlier, that style is contingent on a dress size. It's not. But you did say, yes, people like to buy things off the rack. We like to have that convenience. Even with my clients, you know, I help them buy things off the rack. I don't make them everything. But having a really good alterations assistant can really, really, really change that experience for you. You know, getting back in touch with that old skill set, if you want to buy off the rack, having a good alteration assistant, a local lady, but also someone that you respect and you're willing to pay for her service to make it all better. You don't want to pay her like $5, you know, like it's
exactly. My husband is, he's not a tall man. He's, you know, little below average as far as height. You cannot pay him to not have his pants tailored to the nine. Okay? His shirts, his monogram on his cufflink, on his cuffs. He looks immaculate.
Yeah.
And tailoring is so important. You will buy something and, okay, well, we'll put a pin or you'll put a belt, and it does not do you justice. You really need to, number one, see how close it is to your fit when you get it. Yeah. Work with a tailor or work with a seamstress or work with a designer that really knows what they're doing as far as your measurements. It has, you know, gives you that little extra in case they need to take it in or let it out.
It's one of the first steps in cutting ourselves free of a constant cycle of compromise. What I see happening to women who come to me, they want to get out of a constant cycle of compromise. They're buying cheap things, so therefore they feel crappy. And because they're buying the cheap thing and they feel crappy, they don't feel worthy of getting it altered, but the literal thing they've bought is not worth getting altered. So one of the first steps that I educate people on is, why would you feel crappy about buying something mass production doesn't fit you? Because mass production was never meant to fit you. It's meant to fit a lot of people. Let's just accept that. But start, you know, take the first little step, buy something that's better and find someone to help you make it fit better. You know, that's just one little baby step out of feeling crap in your clothes, buying crap, and then sort of looping around and around this sort of self-fulfilling prophecy of, I feel crap, I'm not worthy, so therefore I go buy crap, I'm not worthy. Like, just one little baby step out is find a local alteration.
So essentially, brains, you're wearing crap. And it's not a cute look. I want to ask you about two more things that are really, really important. Color.
Yes.
Color is... I have a couple friends, everything black, down to their underwear. I got one girlfriend has nothing but black underwear. Someone told me that shows a lack of creativity. To each its own, I get you. But I love bright colors. It makes me feel cheery. It again engages my personality. It draws the compliments. What do you do to help your clients really kind of find their color palette?
I work through them through color on two levels with them. I run an 8-week course called The Politics of Dress. And we really look at the politics of color, which go right back through history. You know, royals, for example, were only allowed to wear purple at one stage through history. Yellow was another color. So, you know, firstly, just getting rid of the idea that, you can't wear certain colors, and just getting them to intuitively identify colors that make them happy. Make them happy. I mean, if there's no better reason than it makes you happy. Secondly, then colors do literally have a psychological impact, firstly on yourself, and then secondly on other people. So starting to teach them the psychology of color, so that they can have the tools in their wardrobe to make them feel the way they want to feel when they get dressed, but also have that effect on others. So, you know, red, for example, I'm wearing red today. Red has always been a color of power. If I put red on, it psychologically has a sense of stepping into my power, but it also has that impression that has that psychological impact on other people. So, you know, I'm working on this with a number of women right now, is what colors do you want to have in your wardrobe? So a day that you want to feel powerful, you can pick that thing up. The day that you want to make people feel calm, you know, around you, you pick a different color. A day that you want to feel connected to nature, what color is that for you? Is it blue or green? You know, Can you draw that color out of your wardrobe? Mm-hmm. So if you start to see your clothes as tools, you start to see them all also as buttons and levers that you can push and pull. Firstly, to feel the way you want to feel, but secondly, to have that emotional impact on other people.
Right.
But I don't believe any color doesn't suit you, because there's all the shades of. So sometimes people say, I can't wear yellow. Well, are you talking about a blue yellow or a black yellow? And you can actually wear any color you want.
Absolutely. And I want to talk about one of your greatest gifts, the ability to repurpose.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. You are absolutely amazing with that. Brains, you can have a dress that you've had, like she said, 10, 15 years ago, and Susan can redesign it and make it into something different. Tell us how you started doing that.
I started doing it probably when I was a kid, really, and just inventing, but really more recently, because my clients do wear their clothes for such a long time, they will wear a dress for 5-10 years and their body will change. They might've had children or just natural aging. They want to keep wearing the dress and the fabric's really good. So because we have such long-term relationships, which is what I encourage other women to find with an alterations assistant or a local designer, of course I'm going to change it for them. Of course I am. That's part of the service I offer. So I started to find new and interesting ways of changing the dresses I had made for them. But I also realized a lot of my clients had beautiful clothing in their wardrobe that they couldn't wear anymore. And I was very happy they were paying me for my service to change it. And make it go with the things that I'm making for them. So it was just such a waste to see beautiful clothing in their wardrobe they weren't wearing. And by taking on that challenge, I learned more about clothing and construction. I learned more about them. And then I also started to encourage, and I do this with my education clients, sometimes in your budget, you're much better to buy secondhand than you are to buy new. There's so much luxury secondhand available out there now that maybe.
Yes, let me ask you about this too. I don't know. Yeah. I have never purchased anything. Well, no, let me take that back. I purchased accessories. Mm. I've never purchased an outfit at a consignment shop or like a Goodwill or a secondhand store. I've never done that. And you know why?
Why?
Because I've been creeped out about the person that was in it before. Honestly, that is just me. So my daughter taught me this process. It's called vodking.
Yeah.
That's what they do. You know, she says, get some cheap vodka.
Yeah.
And spray it. She says it doesn't damage the thing, but it takes out all the scent and all the odor. And then, you know, I'm kind of superstitious that way. I said, maybe I'll burn some sage in the room and just fan it around. But because it holds an energy.
Hmm.
Don't you think?
I do think, but I also think the same is true when things come out of factories by people who maybe are not very happy making them.
True.
So, you know, choose your energy, you know.
Right.
I agree. I think everything holds energy, old or new. And whether it's vodking or a damn good dry clean and a blessing, I think you can change the energy of something. And
I don't see a lot of dry cleaners here in the U.S. anymore. I don't know. I do not. Yeah, there used to be dry cleaners everywhere. I don't know if it's the cost of the chemicals. I don't know if people, you know, again, in California, we are just wash and wear. Just want to wash it, just shake it, put it on, go. They don't even like to iron their clothes. Brains, iron your clothes still, okay? It makes such a difference.
In terms of a lot of the new generation of secondhand, and I read a luxury report, you know, done by one of the big consultation firms with the millennials, the sale of secondhand luxury. So I'm not talking charity shop, secondhand luxury will outstrip the sale of new very shortly.
Really? You know, and I found that too with the Japanese students.
Yes.
They love secondhand tennis shoes.
Yes.
I'm telling you, they spend $3,000-$4,000 on vintage tennis shoes.
Mm. Yeah. So for the brains, it is worthwhile knowing, and I teach a lot of women how to do this. There's a lot of secondhand out there that is not the secondhand charity shop. It's luxury secondhand. And I've bought some things myself. I bought actually some things off an American website. And even though I was on a secondhand website, it literally arrived with the Barney stickers on the bottom of the shoes.
Yeah.
It's not, it might be stuff that hasn't sold new that gets sold through these secondhand websites. The point being, you can sometimes, when you've got a budget and you know what you want, sometimes it's better to invest your budget in a high quality piece of secondhand.
Right.
You'll get better fabric and better construction, particularly if you learn the skill set of working with an alterations assistant. So you know that it's not going to fit you perfectly. You don't have to worry about that.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to take it to the alterations assistant, get it tailored, and you'll have a piece that looks $1 million, maybe for the couple of hundred you would have spent on a compromise. But this is skill set, it's mindset.
Right. And it's education. And thank you so much for the education. Brains, also, you know, you will get these beautiful pieces and it'll be somebody like me that'll purchase it and then get home and not absolutely love it. Maybe carry that bag one time. Maybe wore that hat one time. Maybe wore that dress one time. I remember my mother bought a beautiful, bless her soul. She bought this green dress from, I think it was from a vintage consignment store. I can't even tell you how many compliments she got off that dress and how it made her feel and how she walked into it. It was absolutely gorgeous. If I had have buried her and not cremated her, I might have buried her in it. She could still wear it. It was absolutely striking. So as Susan is saying, that's very, very true. Take your time. Just like you would pick a great piece of steak or you would plan a great vacation, learn to plan and invest in your wardrobe.
I love what you just said then, April, and this is a breakthrough I make for many of the women I do in a workshop. I say, if you weren't buying a piece of clothing, if you're buying a piece of furniture, or something else you really valued, how would you do it? And when we work backwards from them buying a piece of furniture, there's usually this moment where they hang their head in their hands and they go, oh my God, I know how to do this. I just don't do it when it comes to my clothing.
Right. So make that investment.
Yeah. Like think of it, if you stop thinking about it like a piece of clothing, and it's not your fault that it's not the fault of women that they've think about clothing the way they do, because consumerism's really conditioned us into thinking about clothing as disposable, fast, cheap. And society wants to tell us that intelligent women don't put any time and effort into it, and that you would be vain and frivolous if we put time and effort into learning the skills around clothing and dress and style, while there's this, while at the same time conditioning us into behavior that is wasteful and stupid and beneath us. It's a massive double standard, and it's time to just unpick that for our own mental health,
right?
For style that really gives us power, not stuff, and also to deal with the ecological disaster that's happening because of consumerism.
Right. And Brains, you have to understand that your clothing envelops your most prized possession.
It certainly does.
Your body, you know, the thing that you carry with you all the time. So take into consideration what you have on the outside protects and shows off what you have in the inside. Thank you so much, Susan, for being with us here on The Edge. Please tell my brains how to get in contact with you, how to look for your fashion, your styles, how to work with you. She is in Australia, Brains, but don't let that be a distraction.
I'm working with women currently in the US. So as far as education goes, I can work with you anywhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Look, I really like a good old fashioned phone call. Of course, you can go on my websites. Of course, you can download my downloads. But the best way I can help is a good old fashioned conversation. I'm really happy to share my phone number. You can message me on my phone or on WhatsApp or on Messenger, because there's way more that I can do on a conversation than I can do on a website or a download or an email. And I talk to hundreds of women, many who I never work with, but just to try and help them take the next steps, even if it's not with me, April, even if it's just to get some clarity on what they can do. So my phone number, the country code is +61. The phone number is 433-944-864. You're welcome to send me a text message on WhatsApp, or just a regular text message with your name and April Mahoney Brains, and I'll set up a time to talk to you. Otherwise, you can find me on Facebook Messenger, Susan DeMasi. That's DIMASI. Reach out whatever way is comfortable for you. We'll have a conversation. I'll see if I can help you identify intuitively what you're doing right. There'll be something, there'll be intuition that's right, but there's going to be a whole lot of roadblocks and barriers that are wasting your time and your money. And I want to help you get those out of the way. And if I can help, I'll offer you something you want and your needs entirely within your reach. And if you can't, I'll be the first one to try and point you in the right direction.
Well, she is awesome, Sauce Brains. This is not, you know, your normal fashion consultant. This is an education. This is an elevation. This is an exploration of who you are, what your values are, what your purpose is, what you want to look like, what you want to feel like, what you want to represent and what you want to exude and what you want to keep in your closet. Thank you so much, Susan. You are the best, Brains. Go and do what you need to do. Like, love, and share. Again, like, love, and share, because sharing is caring. Thank you so much again, Susan, for being with me. Come back and visit me. Let me see what you're doing, okay?
Thank you, April. Thank you, Brains.
All right. Bye, Brains.